Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling something really core to programming. Imagine you're, say, a teacher, maybe at King's Park School, right?
Okay.
You've got the spreadsheet, loads of student names, loads of test scores. First thing you want to know is probably who got the top score.
Yeah, seems simple enough at first glance.
Exactly. But then you think, wait, I don't just need the number, the highest score. I need the student's name.
Right. The who.
And maybe you also need to figure out, you know, how many got an A, how many got a B. And suddenly, it's not just one simple step anymore.
It spirals, doesn't it? That happens all the time in computing. A seemingly single goal quickly needs a more, well, a clever mix of steps.
That's exactly what we're diving into today. We're looking at standard algorithms application, how these fundamental programming tools, these standard algorithms, can be combined to solve these trickier, multifaceted problems.
Especially when you've got structured data, like those names and scores all linked together.
Yeah, and we'll be using some great resources as our guide, like the Software Design and Development booklet and the King's Park booklet.
So if you've ever stared at a complex coding problem and just thought, where do I even start?
Right.
Then this is definitely for you.
We're going to show how breaking things down into these standard reusable parts is really the way to go for clarity and, frankly, efficiency.
It really is.
So let's start with the basics then. What exactly is a standard algorithm? The sources say it's, you know, a collection of instructions to solve particular problems. But what makes them standard? Why that term?
That's a good point. It's their reusability, yes, but also their proven track record, you could say. Their methods used often and in many different situations.
Okay.
Think of them these like fundamental building blocks. They genuinely make writing code easier because they're pre-tested, efficient ways to do common things.
Like what sort of common thing?
Oh, like validating user input, making sure someone types a number when you need one, or finding a specific piece of data in a big list.
Ah, okay. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time you need to, say, check if a score is valid.
Exactly. It saves a huge amount of development time. You're using proven methods. It makes the whole process much smoother.
Right. Building on solid foundations. Okay, so for these multifaceted problems, like our teacher example, you need to organize the data properly first. And arrays are key here, right?
Absolutely fundamental.
So just a quick recap for everyone. A 1D array, a one-dimensional array, is basically just a list. It stores a list of related values in consecutive memory locations.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to each item using its position, its index, which usually starts at 0.
Correct. But the really interesting part, especially for linking data like names and scores, is using parallel 1D arrays.
Okay, parallel arrays. Tell me more.
So instead of just one list, you have two, or maybe even more, arrays. And the crucial thing is, they're linked by their index.
How does that work?
Well, imagine you have a names array and a scores array. The name at index 0 in the names array belongs to the score at index 0 in the scores array. The name at index 5 belongs to the score at index 5, and so on.
Ah, I see. So the index number acts like a common key, linking the information across the different lists.
Precisely. The sources mentioned it's a great way of using two arrays alongside each other to store different information which correspond to each other.
It's like having columns in a spreadsheet perfectly lined up, isn't it? Column A has names, column B has scores, and row 3 always refers to the same student's name and score.
That's a perfect analogy. The row number is the index.
And that immediately lets you connect, say, a pupil's name with their mark. That seems vital for almost any real-world data handling.
It is. It moves you from just having isolated lists to having a properly related data set. You know who did what?
Okay, so we've got our data beautifully organized in parallel arrays. Now, back to the teacher's question. Who got the highest score? How do we find that and connect it to the name?
Right. This brings us neatly to the finding maximum and minimum standard algorithm.
How does that one work, basically?
Well, the standard approach is you start by assuming the very first item in your scores list is the maximum.
Okay, pick the first one as a starting point.
Yep. Then you loop through the rest of the scores, one by one. For each score, you compare it to the maximum you've stored so far.
And if the new score is higher,
you update your stored maximum to this new higher score. And crucially, you also need to remember the index where you found that new maximum.
Ah, the position is key.
It absolutely is, especially with parallel arrays. The processor can only do one thing at a time, so it checks through one by one using a fixed loop.
So at the end of the loop, you have the highest score and its index.
Exactly. And here's where the parallel arrays show their power. You found the highest score and its index in the scores array.
Right.
You just take that same index.
And use it to look up the name in the names array at that position.
Bingo. That's how you link the index of the max min score back to the name in the parallel array. It solves the who achieved it part perfectly.
That's really neat. It's elegant, actually. You solve one problem, finding the max scores index, and it immediately gives you the solution to the other, finding the name.
It is. And this isn't just theoretical. We see this exact pattern in the materials.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Task 9, problem 2 in the software design and development booklet, that's all about finding the highest score using parallel arrays. Mm. And the Kings Park booklet has task 1D, which is finding both lowest and highest scores, again, with the pupil names, using parallel arrays.
And there's that really comprehensive example on page 81 of the Higher CS Software Design and Development booklet. That one lays out a whole scenario.
Right, where the program has to report the names of the students with the highest and lowest scores after processing data across several parallel arrays.
Yeah, that page 81 example is great because it highlights that real problems often need more than just one algorithm. It talks about the whole development process.
Analysis, design, implementation, the whole lot.
Which brings us to a really crucial point. The power comes from combining these standard algorithms.
Right. It's rarely just one algorithm in isolation for anything complex. So using that page 81 example, what other algorithms would likely come into play?
Okay, well, think about getting the data in first. Before you even find the max score, you absolutely need input validation.
Makes sense. Garbage in, garbage out.
Right? Totally. You have to make sure that the data supplied by the user is of the correct type and within the correct range, like ensuring marks are, say, an integer between 0 and 50.
Mm.
You can't have a score of minus 5 or blue.
So validation first, always. That builds robustness. What else?
Well, let's say the teacher, after finding the top student, wants to look up a specific student's results. Maybe see all their scores across different tests.
Oh, okay. Like a search function.
Exactly. That's where linear search comes in. It's designed to find the position of an item in an array.
So the teacher types in a name.
The linear search finds that name in the names array, gives you its index.
And then you use that index again across all the parallel arrays to pull out all their scores, grades, whatever else you're storing.
Precisely. See how the index is the common thread?
Yeah, it's the key that unlocks all the related data. Yeah. Very powerful. What about the grade counting thing we mentioned at the start?
Good one. For something like count how many pupils achieved each grade, you'd use the count occurrences algorithm.
How does that work?
It's pretty straightforward. You'd iterate through your array of grades, maybe another parallel array holding A, B, C, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep counters. Every time you see an A, you increment the A counter. Mm-hmm. Every time you see a B, increment the B counter, and so on.
Giving you a tally at the end. Simple but effective for summaries.
Exactly. So you've got validation guarding the input, maximum finding the extremes, linear search for specific lookups, count occurrences for statistics, all working together.
It really is like assembling something complex from standard parts and figuring out how they all fit together. Yeah. That's the design phase, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's where you plan it all out. The sources say design is the process of working out how the program will work, how all the modules will fit together.
Using things like pseudocode to sketch out the combined logic, maybe data flow diagrams.
Exactly. And this leads naturally to the idea of modularity. Breaking the big problem down into smaller, manageable chunks or modules.
Like having a separate function just for validation, another for finding the maximum, another for the linear search.
Precisely. Creating separate subprograms. There are huge advantages to this.
Like what?
Well, first, the code becomes much more readable. Each part does one specific job. Second, it's easier to reuse sections of code. Need input validation somewhere else. Just call that module again.
Okay. Readability and reusability. That sounds good.
And maybe the biggest win, especially for complex programs, it makes finding errors much easier. If something's wrong with finding the maximum, you know the problem is likely in the maximum finding module.
Right. Errors get localized to a module. Yeah. Much easier than searching through thousands of lines of tangled code.
Way easier. Mm. Debugging becomes far more efficient. So modularity isn't just neatness. It's fundamental for building and maintaining complex software.
It seems the real skill then isn't just knowing the algorithms themselves, but understanding how to kind of orchestrate them, how to combine them effectively using things like parallel arrays and modular design.
That's it, exactly. It's moving from just knowing the tools to mastering the craft of putting them together to build something robust and functional.
So to wrap up, what we've really seen is that these standard algorithms, finding max min, linear search, counting occurrences, they're powerful on their own, but they become incredibly versatile when you apply them thoughtfully.
Especially using structures like parallel arrays to handle linked data.
Right. And the true artistry, maybe, in software development is figuring out how to combine these building blocks to solve complex, multifaceted problems, making sure the final program isn't just functional, but also, you know, maintainable and solid.
And remember, these aren't just abstract ideas for computer science classes. These principles are working behind the scenes in almost everything you use.
Like the teacher's database example, or banking apps, or even analyzing scientific data.
Yep. It's all about breaking down that complexity into these elegant, manageable, algorithmic steps. That's how complex software gets built.
So here's a final thought to leave you with. The next time you use an app, maybe one that organizes your photos, manages your calendar, tracks your fitness, anything that handles data smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
Take a second to think about the hidden dance going on beneath the surface. Consider those standard algorithms, likely working together in intricate combinations, performing that magic you probably take for granted. What unseen combinations are making your digital life work so effortlessly?
It's quite something to think about, isn't it? The hidden complexity behind the simple interfaces we use every day.